We are in another pandemic winter. Cases are going up. Children are in and out of school because of positive cases at home or around them in class. In Chicago public schools, classes just resumed this week after being fully canceled for 5 days.
Basically, the kids are home right now and they can't do anything.
We spoke with Leah Chibi, a mom of 3 kids in Chicago. She's also a hospital chaplain there, working with COVID patients. We wanted to just ask how she was doing.
And then this bird is being naughty. Hold on.
In addition to her 3 children, ages 11 to 15, Leah also has 2 cockatiels, Lenny and Carl. They swooped onto her head at the start of the interview.
Oh, another one. Sorry. We're going to end up with them on the podcast. That's going to be rough, but.
They continued to peck at Leah's headphones while she talked to us from a comfortable spot in her teenager's bedroom.
It's like one of the few places in the house where I'm actually alone right now.
Lenny and Carl are doing just fine. But Leah and her kids?
It has been pretty stressful for a while. It feels like such a long time.
Leah's job requires her to be on the front lines of COVID, providing what she calls psychological first aid to patients in the ICU. And then the closure of Chicago public schools meant renewed strain.
In some ways in 2020, like there was a lot more stress about the unknownness of the virus, but there was a lot more solidarity, even just within our family. Like everyone was home. We were all home. We were all dealing with it. And then now it just feels like every man for themselves, you know, every decision that anyone makes, it's like, well, I guess we'll do this. So I think it's a lot more fraught these days.
We hear people reaching a fever pitch again for good reason. Whether it's due to pandemic-related illness or logistical problems, snow days that go on for a little too long, or additional crises in our communities. I mean, where I am in New York, there was a massive fire last weekend in the Bronx that killed nearly 20 people. Some families and communities are dealing with unimaginable grief right now. Some of us are not. Let's be clear, experiences vary. But we're still worn down. In today's episode, we're not going to solve anything. We're just asking, are you okay? And we have some thoughts on how each of us can make sure we're okay, even just for right now, today, and maybe it'll also help tomorrow. From 10% Happier, this is Childproof. I'm Yasmeen Khan. We're giving parents some airtime today, talking about where they're at right now. You'll hear check-ins throughout the show. And we'll talk through some ways to make sure we have what we need to stay resilient in this herky-jerky time and perhaps reset expectations for ourselves and for our families. That's coming up after the break.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back. Full transparency here. We had a completely different episode planned for this week, but we found ourselves returning to the latest surge of the pandemic as it kept rearing up in our lives. The whiplash of school closures and isolation guidelines, exhaustion, grief. So we're taking a moment to recognize the heightened anxiety a lot of us are feeling and to ask parents, how are you doing?
I'm trying to be okay. In our communities, we're used to surviving. We don't really think about thriving because we're so busy trying to survive. And that's a problem.
I think I just realized last night how like not okay we are. I mean, we are okay, but thinking back at like everything we've been through, and I'm like, whoa, how are we doing this?
This has been going on for years. It feels like a race that won't finish.
I have, you know, good moments and bad moments. These days, I feel maybe more worried about it than I did 2 months ago, but I'm so used to being worried about it at this point.
I'm super grateful for being able to meet all of my basic needs and most of my wants. Like, I don't take that for granted.
I always say I'm fine, but really, yeah, no, this is difficult. It's crazy. It's super hard to do.
I feel like how I'm doing on a day-to-day is such a like microcosm of how this whole pandemic has gone.
This is my friend, Anna Catherine. She lives in Charlottesville.
Because it's like, one day you wake up and you're feeling great and your kids are in a great mood and you just have this like the first snow day. So for us, that was this past Tuesday. It was just idyllic. Like the kids got in their snowsuits on their own. We were out sledding all morning. You know, I didn't have to worry about work yet. My husband didn't have work and it was great. And then as the days have progressed and we have all been home together, much like a lot of this pandemic, the novelty and joy has worn into more of a nagging at each other, still going out and sledding, but now it's a little icy and there's patches of grass and people are falling and there's tears. And I think we feel that way with the pandemic, right? It's like every time we're like, oh, we're going to be in the clear, you know, we can return to some semblance of what we knew. And then some new variant emerges or, you know, some wrinkle emerges.
I just want to do something, which is just to mention that we're recording this and things are changing so fast. You know, we're recording this on January 7th. And I just want to say that for the record, because who knows what's going to be going on in 2 or 3 weeks.
This is Dr. Mark Burton. He's a developmental pediatrician working with children with issues like ADHD or who are on the autism spectrum. He's brought mindfulness and meditation into his medical practice for nearly 2 decades to help the kids he sees, but also their parents, supporting them in managing the unique stress and ups and downs that come with raising kids with cognitive differences. Mark started meditating when he was a medical resident, kept it to himself for years, and then recognized what a benefit it could be to the parents he worked with.
I found it really a useful way for navigating a really hard time in life for me. And then I almost had like a mini, it was like the light bulb going on. I went to a medical conference in, I think it was in Washington, D.C., where they were talking about the science of stress reduction, the science of mindfulness. And kind of over the course of that weekend, I had this moment of like, wait a second, if this is so valuable and so useful, and I'm working with all these families who are struggling in different ways, all these stressed parents who are overwhelmed, which I've always thought is an under-addressed part of pediatrics and certainly my field. Within the course of that weekend, I realized like, okay, I can't keep these things separate anymore. It was really recognizing that there's a huge value to parents practicing mindfulness, or if you want to drop the word, to building their own resilience so that they can handle the ups and downs of life more naturally.
Did you catch that? He calls mindfulness building resilience. He gets it. Hearing the word mindfulness can make people squirm or give a little side eye.
When you hear a word like mindfulness, it's like, absolutely, it's like oversold now, quick to tap out, and like, who needs this stuff anymore? You know, the most important thing is to come back to, but wait, what are we really talking about? And does that, you know, might that really make my life more easy? So that's, you know, I think that's an important concept in getting started with all this.
Mark defines mindfulness as a way to hone practical skills to be applied in stressful situations, like resilience, also patience, the ability to go a little easier on ourselves. These are all skills he's helped parents in his medical practice work on. I asked Mark to describe how these tools have been useful to the families he sees and how he introduces these concepts in the first place.
One of the basic premises of mindfulness, you know, if you look back to its roots, is that life is inherently changing and uncertain and we can't do anything about that. But how we relate to it is what determines whether we're going to be happy or resilient or not. That's one summary of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've always felt parenting is like the heart and soul of that. I mean, it is the hardest thing in the world. We don't care about anything more than our kids, you know, and we can't control everything. And it's exhausting and frightening.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to resilience, basics of health matter a ton, and especially in our overly tech-driven world, it's really important that parents, you know, find ways to keep that balance, you know, sleep, exercise for ourselves and for our kids. You know, those aren't trivial things. Like, if you can sustain some sort of physical health routine around a household, that goes a long way towards sustaining mental health. Routines in general, all these things add up when it comes to, like, how do you keep people resilient? And there's, you know, there's a second piece. There's actual problem solving to be done too. And, you know, whatever mm-hmm. that might be, you know, you have to handle situations that come up. I think that's an important reframe of mindfulness, because I think it helps people engage with it, is that mindfulness does not mean a quiet mind, and it doesn't mean being calm all the time. You know, even people who practice mindfulness get angry, and our minds are busy all the time. Maybe it changes over time, but it's all just part of the practice. Mindfulness is a practice of resilience.
Yeah.
So mindfulness meditation is a practice that we do to build certain skills. So it's not a relaxation exercise. You know, we can't force ourselves to relax, and we can't force our mind to shut off, and we shouldn't try. But we build certain traits like patience or like awareness that then become part of day-to-day life.
We still have to find a space where we can breathe deeply instead of gasping for breath, as I sometimes find myself doing.
You know, you have like your parenting philosophy or your idea of what these years should look like for your kid, and everything is so restricted now, what they can do.
One of my major parenting philosophies is always kids are individual humans with their own wants and needs, and you have to kind of treat them like that, otherwise it's not fair to them. And that really kind of falls into sharp relief when you get in a situation like this where, you know, one kid is potentially going to have a panic attack if you try to make them go to school, and another kid has a crying meltdown because you're not letting them go to school.
I'm thinking right now about logistics and the stress that comes with, just to speak concretely, the stress that comes with a positive COVID test, whether it's from your own child or someone in your household or in a classroom or something like that, and what that means. One, it could scare people in terms of health, obviously, and someone would be sick potentially, and that's scary. It also unleashes like a logistical nightmare for parents. And when you are having to deal with that, how do you make time to do any self-care? I mean, what are we supposed to do in the course of our day to take those small moments to build resilience?
Right. It's like the core of everything to look at. How are you going to manage the actual crises in life? And I'll give just a brief general answer and then dive into the details. But, you know, generally speaking, the practice of mindfulness over the long term is one of reinforcing traits that we, you know, find valuable so that they're just more part of everyday life. So they're just there. Kind of like if you, you know, wanted to move, you know, boulders for a living, you probably might want to do some weightlifting first. You know, it's not in the moment you actually hit the boulders. You know, there's a book about the research around mindfulness that came out recently called Altered Traits, because, you know, the science is sort of looking towards the fact that the brain develops through this concept called neuroplasticity. And that anything we reinforce over and over again gets stronger and just becomes part of sort of how our brains are wired. So that's part of it, is like putting aside the short-term practice and just recognizing that a longer-term practice develops these traits that help us just stay less reactive and less caught up in mental habit and just all these shifts that help just make life easier. More specifically, one of the more famous teachers of mindfulness, Sharon Salzberg, and she has this great comment recently called small doses many times a day. And what that refers to is if you look at stress abstractly, what's going on partly with stress is that there tends to be this just like constant escalation of itself. So if we don't do something about it, what happens is like something bad happens, which triggers a lot of fearful thoughts, which changes our emotional state, which changes how we think, which changes how our body feels. And it just becomes this like ratcheting up constant state of chronic stress and doesn't let us, you know, handle anything particularly well.
Yeah.
So the concept of small doses many times a day is we just try to break that cycle when we feel like we need it, even just for a few moments, all day long.
Coming up.
And I'll say, I just need 10 minutes where nobody needs anything from me and I can just have some time to myself. And so if I can get that, I'm good. Like I really am. It's just when it's not there because, you know, you're really worried about your kids' needs. There comes one of them now. Mm-hmm. What do you need, bud? What's up? What are we frustrated about?
We'll hear from more parents and learn how to silence your inner hecklers, or at least not take them too seriously. That's after the break.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back. We're using this week's show to take one deep damn breath. We're checking in with parents on the anxieties they're working through right now, whether it's the logistical strain of school closures and childcare or the general fears for your kids' well-being, magnified by the strain of the pandemic.
My daughter had 2 back-to-back panic attacks.
This is Dion, a mom in Brooklyn. Her youngest attends a competitive public high school in Manhattan.
It was terrifying. And I felt helpless because I didn't know what to do. My training prepares me to I can do trauma-informed and healing-centered engagement. But as my child is having a panic attack in front of me where her eyes are wide and her hands are shaking, that was scary for me. And I think as adults, as parents, we don't like to feel helpless. We want to feel like we're omnipotent, right? And I can do all things because I'm mom or I'm dad, but I can't, and we can't. And we also have to say that, right? And I'm gonna need help. I'm gonna need help on this one.
Throughout this episode, we've been hearing from parents and from Mark Burton, a developmental pediatrician and a dad. He's been utilizing mindfulness practices with families to help them manage their own stress and manage their own care around developmental issues like ADHD. Earlier in our conversation, Mark quoted the meditation teacher Sharon Salzberg and her philosophy, small doses many times a day. It refers to incorporating small breaks of breathing or sitting with your thoughts to interrupt the snowballing effects of stress. Not trying to be prescriptive, but I thought it would be helpful to hear how overwhelmed parents can introduce some of these tools into their day right away.
One of the most important ways, especially during difficult times like this, I think, to reframe mindfulness is that it's really a practice of directly building patience on a very literal level. Because one way to reframe meditation practice isn't that you're trying to relax, because if you force yourself to relax, it's trying to force yourself to sleep. It doesn't really work. But what you can practice is for those 10 or 12 minutes of practice, or longer if you want, you are allowing yourself to sit with whatever is going on without your normal reactivity and habits, mm-hmm. Without your normal stuff. It doesn't mean you won't problem solve some other time of the day. You can talk about using mindfulness and activism, and we do have to go out and change the world. But for those 10 or 12 minutes, you're just being patient with like, this is my experience. Mm-hmm. With some sense of care and compassion, I'm just going to say, this is it. There was an article I read many years ago called 15 Breaths. And what that person recommended is that we take 15 breaths once an hour. And I don't care if you do 10, it doesn't matter. 10 or 15 breaths takes less than a minute. For anyone who hasn't tried mindfulness practice, the premise isn't that we're trying to do anything with our breath. It's just that there is this motion that happens in our body with each breath. There's some movement with each breath. And if we do our best to pay attention to that physical sensation of our breath moving in and out of our body, that gets us out of our head by nature. Any moment you're paying attention to something physical like that, you're not mm-hmm. caught up in all that stress and anxiety, even if just for a few moments. The point of that article was not just that that's valuable. So for those 10 or 15 breaths, hopefully, you know, the fight or flight syndrome is very closely related to stress. So hopefully we're sort of, you know, the fight or flight syndrome, which is like the attack or run state of mind, is sort of sadly unsubtle in human beings. You know, like you'd think after all this evolution, there'd be nuances to it, but it's really just an on-off switch. We're either in that mode or out of that mode.
Yeah.
So the 10 or 15 breath practice is, again, it's not going to work. I think if you tell someone to go take a breath, you know, that often is very judgmental sounding. You're telling them like, you know, be quiet and sit over
there.
Yeah. It's like terrible stuff. If you're familiar with mindfulness practice, it's much more practical. It's that any moment you can bring your awareness to a breath, it's just getting out of your thoughts, getting out of the emotions that are swamping you for just a moment or two. And that can help break that stress cycle.
Mm-hmm.
The point of that article was if you do it once an hour, that actually adds up to about 10 or 12 minutes of practice a day, of settling yourself a day, which is awesome.
It's really helpful for me to develop some sort of stance around a thing that I can't control, which is like, it can't get worse. Even though this is bad, I still feel safe, or I still have this and that. And I mean, I do a lot of, you know, listening to music, listening to podcasts, things that make me think about something else other than this. Mm-hmm. And as much as possible, just because I need the distractions.
Yeah,
that's pretty much what I do. I watch a lot of K-dramas, and I notice that I watch them more when I'm feeling sad or depressed. So I've been doing a lot more of that right now.
So in addition to just like recognizing when we're at heightened stress and how to calm ourselves down, calm, I guess, for lack of a better word, how do you talk to parents about maybe resetting expectations in general? Because if, as parents, we're sort of accustomed to having to make a bunch of decisions and things change and we're used to that on some level, like things are just at a whole other level now. How do we maybe reset our expectations for ourselves about what we can handle or what we should try to accomplish in a day?
That's another great question. And it brings a few things to mind. One is somebody taking one of my classes after practicing for a while said, you know, I feel a whole lot happier every day if I could stop shooting on myself so much. You know, I should be doing this. I should be better. Yeah. I shouldn't have. That was like a revelation to her. And that relates to this concept that, you know, is part of what you're talking about, which is that, again, mindfulness is awareness, but it's not just awareness of what's going on outside of us. It's awareness mm-hmm. often of like our own mental world. And one of the loudest voices for most of us is often talked about as the inner critic, which is this recognition that we tend to relate to ourselves mentally way more harshly than we would to anybody else in life.
I know.
You know, you can do an exercise where you can do it now while you're listening. If you think for a moment of, imagine you're about to go speak in front of a huge crowd. And as you walk up to, you know, give your talk, you just completely wipe out, just, you know, not physically hurt, but just papers everywhere, coffee everywhere, your clothes are stained, the whole crowd's watching you. You know, think for a second what those first thoughts you would have would be. Yeah, and they tend to be, you know, pretty unhappy. You're the worst. This always happens to you. Everyone's looking at me. This is going to go terribly now.
I have a very strong visual right now of myself face down.
Okay, good. Okay, now think if you were sitting in the front row and your best friend did exactly the same thing, what would be the first thing you would say and do?
I would rush on stage or something.
Yeah.
I would help them.
Yep.
I would definitely not judge them.
Correct. You would jump on stage, and most people would, with their best friends, say, it's okay. Take a second. Happens to everybody. We'll get you back together. You can give this talk. And I'll use one of the buzzwords, even though I know you and I both don't like them. But it is the field. In the field of psychology, it's called self-compassion.
Yeah.
In real life, what it means is that when we can learn to treat ourselves more similarly to how we treat other people, our resilience improves, our problem-solving skills improve, how we treat other people changes. A lot of this comes from research from Kristen Neff at the University of Austin in Texas. And a lot of what's driving us as parents to feel pressured all the time and like we got, you know, got to be doing one more thing, got to be fixing one more thing, got to be changing one more thing, is that sense of perfectionism and the inner critic.
Well, I mean, this is so clearly useful. I mean, it's so clearly necessary, but it sounds like something you have to work on for a long time. And is there like a mindfulness first aid kit, like an emergency kit that we're like, if we need to work on self-compassion or just like going a little easy on ourselves today?
There absolutely is. I mean, the first step to changing any habit is awareness. Mm-hmm. So that's been looked at in many aspects of life, you know, and basically what that means is if you want to begin to change that habit of pushing yourself too hard and being too harsh with yourself, it's a huge step just to acknowledge it's there. So that actually is not a small step. And then even just in day-to-day life, you can start just noticing it. Sharon Salzberg, again, talks about how she just gives it a name, which actually I had a psychologist once told me the same thing. You just give it a name to depersonalize it a little bit. So she says she calls hers Lucy. I like calling mine Butthead, but that comes from, it's like, it's just like this heckling, nasty voice. Huh. I sometimes think of it when I'm feeling gentler, like Waldorf and Statler from the Muppets. It's like this heckling voice that's just going to keep heckling, doesn't matter, whatever's going on. And just like, you know, Kermit and the Muppets, just to date myself a little bit, you know, you don't have to take the heckler seriously. And you can just start noticing like, oh, that's the self-criticism again. You can't force it away. That's a illusion that really just tends to lead to more stress and mental exhaustion is when we have some thought that we just don't like and we try to squash it. It doesn't really work. Yeah. But you can learn to relate to it differently by just beginning to recognize like, oh, I'm really just so critical of myself, and just start to say, thanks, Lucy. You know, thanks, I got it.
I feel like we've gotten a lot better at letting things go. Before, we might have gotten stuck on like, the kids need to brush their teeth. They have to brush their teeth right now. And then, you know, some days it's like, okay, we're all done. Just get in bed.
Yeah.
And everyone get in my bed, and that's fine too. Just, you know, just go to sleep.
Or everyone hears a device, just sit in front of a screen for the next 8 hours. And we're going to do it too.
So knowing better when to like, you know, kind of lower the standards and just let it go.
We're less petty about things.
Yeah.
Certain things, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Like if nobody feels like doing this special Long Island trip because everyone just wants to sit around, we'll just be like, okay, well, let's just stay home then.
Was it last year where we were like, we always did Santa at Macy's?
Oh yeah, right.
And we're like, should we do it? It's mask, it's going to be, you know, whatever. We've done it every year. We have the pictures of every year. And everyone was like, no, I don't want to do it. And we were like, okay, no, great.
Whereas in previous years, we would have been like, no, we're doing Santa. We're going to have pictures of Santa.
Yeah.
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 How would the lessons, I guess, that you have learned from working with parents of kids with ADHD or on the autism spectrum, how would you say that that applies to this moment now where there is extra uncertainty and where parents do have to be more flexible or compassionate with themselves?
I think in many ways it speaks to the universality of all of this, that, you know, all of us have challenging times. All parents have times that are really difficult and struggle with the fact that they can't, you know, control and manage everything for their kids. And I think, you know, this is a moment in time where we're all feeling that 100 or 1,000-fold. I mean, you know, there are no great answers to some of these situations. And I don't have a yes, no answer to, you know, for example, how to best manage the schools. All of these are, you know, wildly difficult and complex situations. This is a mental health and demographic and social disaster. And, you know, everybody needs more resources allocated to, you know, just taking care of each other.
My last question is, you're a dad, correct?
I am.
How old are your kids?
I have a high schooler who's going to college soon and a middle schooler.
And how, as a parent, how would you say you're doing? Are you okay personally?
Thank you for asking. If you asked me this week, I would say I'm doing pretty well this week. I have definitely had my ups and downs during the pandemic, was definitely skirting exhaustion and burnout during home learning. So it has been a roller coaster ride. If you ask my family, I'm sure, even just a few weeks ago, they would say that maybe dad needs a vacation, but right now things seem, on the scale of everything going on, okay this week. One of the best pieces of advice I got going into medical school was to find one thing that kept you sane and keeps you sane, and don't let anyone take it from you. You know, just don't drop that. Just make sure that one thing at least is always there. And I think the same thing holds for any, you know, really challenging time.
For Mark, that one thing is exercise, especially running outdoors. I keep thinking about what one dad said at the very beginning of our show, that it feels like we're in a race that won't finish. And I'll add, we're racing on a course with surprise sharp turns. It's hard to keep up a stride. I feel that. As we were wrapping up this episode, my own husband and 4-year-old tested positive for COVID. Everyone is okay health-wise so far, thank goodness. But you all know it's a scramble. You all also know that's an understatement. But that's why we wanted to take this episode to stop and think about building up the skills that we need when we're scrambling. Resilience, patience, also to know what's interrupting our focus throughout the day. And we have a bonus. If what Mark said about starting a long-term practice resonated with you, we've got something to help you get going. Here at 10% Happier, we have an app that's got tons of meditations, some even with Sharon Salzberg, who you heard Mark mention. So we went rooting around in the library to find something that might help if you're feeling particularly challenged right now and want to stop and gather yourself a bit. So if you can, find a comfortable and quiet place to sit. And for the next 5 minutes, you're going to be guided by Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams. This is called Point Meditation, and I'm going to let her take things from here.
Greetings. My name is Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams, and I'm going to share with you a meditation that I call Point Meditation, or sometimes just The Point. Point Meditation is pretty helpful because you can use it at other times than formal meditation, including in this particular time where many of us find things pretty challenging. So I'm going to start by inviting you to just cast your eyes downward. You don't have to have your eyes closed, but if you prefer them to be closed, you can do that. And as you begin, start taking a little bit of notice of your body. And then take a little bit of notice of your emotional state. Maybe you brought something in that is particularly difficult that you're working with, or just the state of the world in general has been particularly challenging for you. And just notice how that is on your heart. And also on your mind, what is your mental state? If you're feeling a little bit of agitation, tension. Now allow your attention to come onto your breath, noticing your breath as it flows in and out. And begin to draw your focus to where your breath is as it rests in your belly, noticing how the belly moves in and out. You're going to place your attention, awareness on your breath as it rests in your low belly. Some people call that the core, and it's just a few inches or so below your navel. And we'll call that location the point. It is the point of our meditation, and everything else is other than point. So the meditation is pretty simple. Whenever you find your attention, awareness at other than point, you'll simply gently and firmly bring your attention back to point. Just allowing your breath to flow in and out naturally. Perhaps having awareness of the expanding and contracting of the belly. As in-breath and out-breath flows naturally, we can let our attention awareness rest in the low belly. Open your eyes completely. Thank you for spending this time with me. Hope to see you again soon.
You can find so many more meditations on the 10% Happier app, as well as courses to help you along if you're just starting out, challenges to keep you motivated, and even more podcasts. Just download the app wherever you find them. This episode was produced by Palace Shaw and Kimmy Regler, our managing producer. Our executive producer is Jen Poyant. Mixing by Chester Guazda, with additional mixing and scoring by Matt Boynton of Ultraviolet Audio, who also lent us his holiday opinions for this episode.
No, we're doing Santa.
Carolyn Packer-Riggs wrote our theme music. Connor Donahue is our technical operations manager. Special thanks to Stacia Brown, Leah Chibi, Anna Catherine Clemens, Tanisha Grant, Lizzie Hoke, Dion Grayman, Melissa McAllister, Jay Michelson, Josmar Trujillo, and Noah Veltman. Childproof is a production of 10% Happier. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It's a small way for you to help more people find the show. And thanks. If you like our show, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. Episodes of Childproof are available free wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to hear new episodes 1 week early, you can download Amazon Music. Or if you want to hear new episodes early and ad-free, you can subscribe to Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app. Please support our show by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey.